Angie's List is now Angie, your home for everything home. Angie still has the same top pros and reviews you've counted on for more than 20 years, only now you'll also get access to all the tools you need to make your home a happy place. Inside, outside, big or small, Angie helps you find the right solution for whatever you need done, all from your phone. It's simple to find upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. You can even search pricing guides to see what others paid for similar jobs and easily compare quotes from top local pros to make sure you're getting a fair price. From lawn care to repairing the AC to the project of your dreams, Angie has your home projects handled from start to finish. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, they'll cover your project up to the full purchase price plus limited damage protection with their happiness guarantee. Make your home an Angie home. Check out Angie.com today. And for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm.
Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, model and comedian Eugenia Kuzmina shares a story about being fired from a Zac Efron film.
I had no idea how lucky I was to get this film, that awkward moment with Zac Efron. I was like, okay, you know, it's fine. I was so lucky. They flew me to New York. They paid for my tickets and I had to play a bartender. So my scene, they called it at like midnight and I have to clean some dishes and like make drinks, play a bartender, and Zach had a scene with another guy. He was a customer. So I kept breaking dishes one after another because as a model, I actually never had a real job and I had no idea how to bartend or clean the dishes.
Today on the show, model and comedian Eugenia Kuzmina shares a story about being fired from a Zac Efron film. And then we talk all about modeling. Stay close.
Hello, I'm Eugenia Kuzmina, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 10 years, or you're a new fan, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week with Nicky Henriksen. And what an interesting guy he was. Eugenia, here's a guy. He's not a comedian, which is odd for me because I mostly have on comedians. He's a businessman who is from Germany, comes over here to go to Stanford in California here. And he and his college roommate and friend, they create a company called Carlypso, which they have for about 3 years, and then they sell the whole damn thing to Carvana. Carvana is the largest used car site in the United States. And so, and I think they're worth like $4 billion now or something. So anyway, this was a really interesting story, you guys, with Nicky Henriksen. So go back, listen to Nicky's story. It's a very unique for Storyworthy for sure. But not today, you guys, not today, because today I'm here with another unique guest, Eugenia Kuzmina. And Eugenia is a comedian, but she's also a supermodel. What is happening? What is happening? Eugenia, have you ever seen that postcard where it says like, there are, I don't know the number, but there are, you know, there are 2 billion women in the world and 7 are supermodels or something like that. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I think now, thank God, like modeling industry is changing so much because I always believe that beauty is objective. You know, it's subjective, not objective.
Subjective, yeah. Subjective, yeah. Yes. Just the
English
opposite.
English is my third language. So just to let you know, I can mess up words sometimes.
That's
but,
all right.
You know, I think it's such a subjective title as well. You know, I think every woman has her beauty and the uniqueness of your personality. That's what's beautiful.
Yeah, I think so too. There was just the standard, as you know, in the 70s and 80s, that there was only one person, you know, one type of person.
Yeah, I used to starve myself at some point, but then I decided my health was more important, you know.
I would say, but that does have to be hungry. I was thinking like, that does have to be difficult. And here's what I was thinking of. You have a bit in your stand-up that I saw on tape, okay? So here's what happens, you guys. Eugenia comes on stage to do stand-up, and she doesn't say a word. She just does those that modeling walk, you know, that gaze, that like that dead-eyed stare, and you do the modeling walk, and you obviously are very authentic. And then you finally land at the microphone, and the first thing you say is, I'm hungry. That is so funny, Eugenia.
You know, what I realized when I became a comedian that I have to be really authentic. And a lot of times, like my first managers or, you know, producers would say, oh, you have, if you want to be a comedian, you have to like not shower for days and like show up like you dress like, you know, you came from, you know, living on the streets and things like that. And
that's
I tried.
Only if you're at an open mic in the comedy store.
I tried so hard to fulfill that image, but it's just not who I am, you know? So one day I just decided, you know, if I want to communicate and tell a story, like I'd rather be authentic. And, you know, I am a model, so people see that. And if I deny that, it would be just not something that we will connect. It will be a disaster. So, yeah. So I just decided to you know, communicate to people from what I know and from what I lived. And
yeah, well, it's super interesting. I mean, just there aren't that many people walking down the street that you turn your head. There really aren't. I mean, you know, most people are just like regular. Not in LA. In LA, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a model.
Or like a character, you know, everybody's a character and an actor, I would say.
So you do turn your head in LA, but in general, you know what I mean? Because first of all, how tall are you?
I'm 5'9". So I'm actually the smallest. I was always the smallest of the models, like on the catwalk, because they usually like 6 feet at least were.
Yeah, 5'9" is not that tall.
Yeah, I'm tiny.
That's really interesting. Yeah, because I would have said, because I saw some of your stuff and I just would have said immediately 6 foot tall.
I know. I wear like 10-inch heels just, you know, to project that image.
No, seriously. What are the biggest heels? What are the tallest?
I don't know, like 15 maybe in some runways. And I fell down a few times. You know, I remember those catwalks where you just try to keep it together to like make it through. It's
Wait
a skill.
Minute. Yeah, because the shoes are always kind of part of the outfit, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And so how high are some of the
like
shoes?
Like 15 inches, you know.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
How can that be?
You know, there's some designers which are really eccentric, like Alexander McQueen or Thierry Mugler. So their shoes are really part of the show. And I don't think they even sell them. Like sometimes you just walk in the catwalk in those shoes and, you know, they're part of the art. And you have to present the art. So.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, you know, sometimes when I would flip through a Vogue or I'd flip through a fashion magazine, I look at the clothes and I like bust out laughing. Like, where am I going to wear that, Trader Joe's?
Yeah, you know, why not? I mean, now everything's a catwalk. Like, if you make it out of your house during pandemic, it's already like, where else would I wear my clothes? You know, I'd rather dress up for Trader Joe's.
You don't really dress up. You don't dress up, right?
I do sometimes. I don't know. My stylist, like my friends, they always joke, like, you know, like you have to wear this clothes somewhere because for another maybe 2 years, you won't have an opportunity. So I do dress up just for fun.
Yeah. Oh, that's
a joke.
That is fun. But do you like to put on makeup and stuff? Because I would think that wouldn't be...
You know, it's funny because before this pandemic, I actually didn't have a chance to do my makeup. I hated makeup because if you wear it for the job, you know, I have to preserve like my skin and, you know, try not to do the makeup. But now because of the FaceTime shoots and things like that, you actually have to have the skill of being a makeup artist. So yeah. I would do like live shows by Instagram or any other platform. And the makeup artist would teach me how to do makeup. So I actually became pretty good.
That's pretty interesting. Is the makeup artist, was she a friend or he a friend?
Well, we work together in a lot of projects. So, you know, she kind of teaches the whole audience how to do makeup and it's pretty elaborate and crazy makeup. I was really scared the first time, like my hands were shaking and, you know, I was like, it's impossible. But the result was kind of okay. I'm actually proud.
Yeah. Did they tell you what to buy as well? Mm-hmm.
Well, they have really great products, but because everything is closed right now, I literally ran to CVS and got whatever is available there, you know?
Wow. That's so interesting. Yeah. How about how now that CoverGirl and some of these other makeup companies are prohibited from showing a person who is Photoshopped?
That's great. You know, and it was for a while like that. I used to do Chanel campaigns and they say like, you can't really show, you know, the skin. It has to be a model skin. It can be Photoshopped. So what they used to do, they used to bring these big lights like from the cinema And they would blind you, literally. They hired like a few girls, and the girl before me, she got like some kind of a problem when she looked at the light.
And they had to go
to the hospital. But with my eyes, like for some reason, I could look in directly into movie lights and like nothing happened. So it was
wow. Wow. I bet they really liked you then, because then they can use you.
I know. Yeah, they can use me.
Yeah. Wow. I have to address, I hear your children in the back. So first you have to just tell us a tiny bit about your kids.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're always part of my shows right now, because with Zoom, you know, we're all stuck together. So they come in and out of all the shows. And I have two kids of my own and one stepson. So my stepson is 18. My son is 12. His name is Teddy. So when he saw that film Ted on the billboards in LA, he's like, sure, I need to see that film. I'm like, no, you're not allowed to see that film.
Yeah, it's ironically really dirty, isn't it? That's
it funny. Is. Yeah. So he was really upset about that. But and my daughter is 8, and she's a killer. We just went beehiving, actually. We, you know, first time learn about bees.
What does that mean?
You learn about bees and you come really close to them and you learn all how is honey made and things like that. So it was very dangerous and exciting. And my 8-year-old.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, it is super fun.
It sounds like the perfect social distance activity, because you're in a mask,
it
right?
is. Yeah, of course. You're in a mask, protected, and like, you know. The whole thing.
So is it like a hood? What is it?
It's a full suit. You know, it's a full suit. So you feel like you're going into space, but, you know, it's actually really interesting.
I remember as a kid, we had to have a beehive cut down from a tree. And this guy came to the house, knocked on the door like a spaceman. And we just thought that was like the most exciting thing, you know?
I know. There's this whole like connection to bees thing where you like come and you smoke around, like make sure that they're okay around you, that you are coming, you know, like the beekeeper, she was explaining there's an art to it, and you basically like meditate while they buzz around you. So
no, I think that's super interesting. I can't imagine. I think somebody in my family, listen to me, I have a big family. Somebody keeps bees. It's like my niece's husband does that in Pennsylvania, where I'm from, and or his parents do. Anyway, I guess it'd be fascinating. I think it's something you would have to do as a hobby, and it would be ongoing. It's not like you could just get these bees and then whatever.
Well, it's so funny because I have a friend in Paris who has a beehive, and I think she has a roof, probably not in her apartment, but she ordered bees by Amazon or something else. And then they had to deliver it. So the delivery man was just scared to death while he was holding the box, not knowing what is going to happen. You know?
That is so funny. You just order bees. I've seen that like with ant farms. You can just order ants.
Yeah, exactly.
For kids, you know, that's really funny. So today, Eugenia, you bring forth the topic Fired from a Film with Zac Efron. So it's very specific. And I love this kind of story because I already know that you were fired from a film with Zac Efron.
You know the end story.
Yeah, so I'm anxious to hear more about it. This is going to be really fun.
It is a very awkward story.
Oh,
for
this
sure.
is going to be fun. I really look forward to it. Also, I just wanted to ask you, because I know that you are from Russia, and that is post-Soviet Russia. And I know that you actually, your family went through the breadlines and all that sort of thing, right?
I have a joke that it's interesting for me in pandemic in the US, you know, they have food lines in Russia. Like we had food lines, at least in America, they have food in food lines.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. Right.
Wow.
And where do your parents, now your father passed away. I know that.
Yeah.
And that's such an interesting story there. He was a nuclear scientist and he worked at Chernobyl.
He didn't work there, but he was one of the first responders with Khrushchev. I don't know if you guys seen the TV show. It's pretty accurate. So he was one of the guys, like one of the first guys who jumped in the helicopter and had to assess, you know, the disaster area and things like that. So there was a whole thing.
That's amazing. How old were you then?
I was like two. I mean, that was before me. The Chernobyl was before me, but I heard a lot of stories, you know, after like what happened. And instead of princess stories, I heard those stories, like how many people didn't know because the government didn't quite respond correctly, you know, and a lot of people didn't know.
I don't know. I have no idea what that would be like.
Yeah.
You know, if your government didn't respond correctly, well, what would happen? You know, like if there was a pandemic and the government didn't respond correctly, I wonder.
I know.
I'm kidding. It's just a disaster over here. I mean, I'm just saying, because like we never thought in America that our government could be as twisted as Russia. Yeah. And now we're seeing that, in fact, it can happen even to, you know, us.
I know.
And you grew up with
that. Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. You learn really fast, you know, to critically think for yourself. And all those survival skills, you know, they're very useful. So in this pandemic in US, I was, you know, ready on the fly to, you know, how to deal with that and, you know, be safe and be safe with my family. So it's interesting.
Well, you're resourceful. And that is a huge, you know, that's a huge plus, and you have ingenuity to create and to keep moving forward, even though we've been, you know, hit blindsided.
For sure.
Plus, I read about you, of course, and you moved to Paris at the age of 15 by yourself. You were like, it seems so crazy, you know, you were discovered, but that is what happened. Somebody saw you, right?
Mm-hmm. On the street. Yeah. A lot of times I think there was like a period of time when girls from Russia and Brazil were kind of exported to like Paris and New York, and their standard of beauty was considered, you know, whatever, interesting. So that's how people used to come to Russia and scout models. And, you know, they used to have these competitions, like elite model look and things like that. So I was part of that wave of models.
But did you believe that person when they came up to you? I mean, tell me what that was like.
Well, a lot of times they would come and I would say no, but then one person came and of course, like my dad and my mom was like, no, you know, they're going to take you and you're going to end up dancing on tables in Turkey. Like it's completely not true. But an agency sent me a letter and the director of this agency, she's a woman. And, you know, we talked to her before going there. You know, she provided all the documents and kind of, you know, they gave us an advance. So for me, it was such a huge chance. And somehow I convinced my parents to let me go with them. So they flew me and my mom because I was a minor.
Good. Did she stay with you then in Paris?
Yeah, we had an amazing time, you know, first 3 months. And then she had to go. Obviously, they couldn't, you know, keep her there. And
I was
delivered to the dorm with other like 6 or 9 girls. And we're all on bunk beds. And it's not as glamorous as it seems, you know. We had to.
Yeah, but it sounds like a Hallmark movie or something, you know, like or some sort of, you know, a girl on girl, some sort of prison movie or some sort of premise of a bad movie. Or, you know, a pornographic movie.
I love that. Girl and girl. Oh, my God.
So did you learn French?
I did, you know, because in France, not a lot of clients would speak English. So I knew English a little bit from my school, but I didn't know French. So I learned really fast by listening to TV shows or, you know, I had some friends who were out of the business. So I would go to dinners with them and I made an effort to speak French. Yeah, for
sure. That's wonderful. Yeah. And you were motivated to do it. So that was really smart. Yeah. So you speak English, you speak French, and you speak Russian.
And a little bit Portuguese, because I went to Brazil for a few seasons to do shows there, which was so exciting. You know, I love Brazilian culture and the carnival and just the
and way where they are. Would you, like, again, would you go to Brazil? Would they put you up in a nice hotel now finally, or would you still be in dorms with 10 girls?
No, actually, in Brazil, I went when my career was already established, and I'm so thankful my agent, Luis Matos, who actually made careers. He worked with Gisele, and he worked with Gigi Hadid, and he made a lot of girls. So I was so lucky. You know, it so depends on who is your agent and how they, you know, they portray you and, like, if they're on your team. So when I went to Brazil already, he, you know, made sure that I was in a hotel and treated correctly, you know, and safe and everything like that. So I was very lucky.
Yeah. So you get to that place in your career where you really can travel and see the world and be kept safe. And so you must be like in the top, what would you call like the top 10% then of, you know, getting that opportunity? Because it seems like a lot of modeling is, it can almost be dangerous, right?
I mean, now with social media, I think it's completely a different business. Mm. You know, at the time, I think it was, you know, especially if you, there was a Trump agency. So
oh
if you're
my
with
gosh.
Trump agency, it's a totally
Was it
different.
Really that Trump?
Yeah, it was Trump agency. A lot of girls, they, you know, it was kind of known, like you go for dinners after your jobs and you meet different people. And a lot of times, girl, it was more like, oh, okay, I can find a husband or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
But I was lucky because for me, obviously, it was very important to be independent from a young age, you know? So that was completely, you know, I didn't go with Trump Agency. I went with Ford Models first and then IMG. So Ford Models was run by Katie Ford and she was super protective of all the girls. And I remember we had like a big apartment and a chaperone. And then all these guys like Leo or other people were waiting downstairs. And Katie made sure that we were protected, you know, from not getting into like clubs or things like that.
Yeah. So who was Katie? Like how old was she? And was she like a motherly type or what was her, or was she like a,
she has kids
super young?
No, not super young. No, her mom, Eileen, she started from Ford Models, iconic woman, you know, and then Katie kind of inherited the business and they were really protective. They wanted women to, you know, be financially independent and they taught you that it is a business and that, you know, it's more important to have a job than go with promoters. A lot of times they're promoters who would like send you free cars and go to clubs and dinners, everything free. And, you know, they promote their club like that way.
Yeah, because they just want to see you there, right? They just want to see you.
Yeah. Well, that attracts, like at a certain time, it was attractive for businesses, you know, they can attract more clients. So Katie was really educational in that sense because as a young girl, you don't know, you know, like you're a teenager and you want to have fun. Like
your parents must have been really scared for you in a way, right? I mean, your mom learned what it was like, but.
I mean, they didn't know. And for us, honestly, that was kind of like the only opportunity when I lost my dad to, you know, to support my family. My mom wasn't working for a long time. So that's why for me, it was such a motivation to be independent. I saw how hard it is, you know.
And you would send money home.
Yeah, I would, especially, you know, a lot of times at the shows, they would have like a big table with food and things like that. And I remember just like packing all this food in my like Prada purse and then sending it away. And I had this kind of habit for a long time. I remember even with my husband, we were on vacation and I'm like, I'm not going to finish this breakfast. So I packed all my things and put it to my purse. And he's like, okay, only Russians do that.
Oh, you know, that is so interesting. No, I mean, that's in your soul. If that's how you grew up and that's how you had to provide for your family. It is astounding because I think now, like my daughter's 13. I think like in 2 years, she'd be supporting me. Like what? You know, that's amazing that you had that much, you know, wherewithal and maturity to do that.
I think a lot of times when you grow up in, unprecedented times, and in Russia, it was a lot of things were changing. It was Wild West. So you can, you know, you grew up really fast.
Yeah, I bet. Not at all like American kids.
I'm sure now they're like tech savvy, right? Like all the kids are on Zoom, like schools, they figure out it so fast.
They're so smart. Yeah, they're so smart. I've always said I'm not going to let my daughter pass me in technology. And she hasn't, but she's very close. And she can figure out things much quicker than I can. And I do look at her like, oh my gosh, that was weird. Because I felt like I was always the one that knew more.
I know.
That's crazy. All right. Let me ask you one more thing about modeling and then we're going to go right to your story because I'm very excited. Mm-hmm. What do you do if you wake up with a pimple or you wake up with a cold sore? You can't work, right?
I mean, now they invented this thing called Photoshop. So I think you can always work.
I see. Oh, see. So they would just say, don't worry about it. Eugenia will do it in post.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, you have to make sure that you're not contagious with anything that you're sick with. You know, you have to be respectful to go to work. But yeah, before it used to be film. So everything has to be like perfect with the light, you know, and it took forever to take even like one shot. You have to do Polaroids before actually making a shot. So, you know, a lot of photographers has had amazing skills at that time. You know, now everything is Photoshop. So you go and you shoot like 5 editorials in one day and nobody cares how you look. Actually, nobody cares. You know, they can add makeup, they can add anything. And even now there are models who are robots. Can you believe that? So
is that true?
Yeah, little Michaela and other girls, they have 1 million followers and no soul. So it's changing.
Wait a minute. Seriously, there are models that people are following and they're not real people.
Yeah, They are. Like, Bellman campaign, you know, was made by girls who are robots. And yeah.
Oh my God. Wait a minute. What campaign was that?
Bellman. Yeah. You can see, like, if you Google Little Michaela robot model, you can find that. Uh-huh. And it literally says, like, a model who has a million Instagram followers and no soul.
That is so funny. Yeah, I don't know what I'm thinking. They could do anything now digitally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking, like, even when I got, like, headshots in college, though, right? So I'm talking about the early 80s. You know, it would be obviously those big proof sheets, mm-hmm. and then you would take that loop and you would look at each picture so specifically. And now, as long as you have the outline of a person, you could really do almost anything.
Well, it's funny because my agency and a lot of agents now require for all the models to have a 3D projection of yourself. And, you know, you go into this place and they have all these cameras around you and they create this 3D projection, which is, you know, it's like a moving projection of you that they can sell as a hologram later for, you know, maybe hotels or something else.
No, I had no idea. So what are you wearing? Is it like a...
You wear nothing. You have to, I mean, not nothing, but you have to wear, like, you know, a bikini or some, just an outline of your body so they can dress you digitally after and sell it to companies.
That is unbelievable. That is so interesting. You know, now that you're saying that, if it reminds me, I have a friend named Stephanie Courtney, and she's actually Flo from the Progressive commercials. Mm-hmm. And she was telling me about the holograms they're making of her. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, am I going to open the refrigerator one day and see you? And she's like, kind of.
Yes, it's true.
That's unbelievable. So you've done that. Where do you go? Where do you go to do that? It's just an office building or?
Yeah, it's an office building. It's a studio. Yeah, like an office building. And, you know, they work with different companies and actually – like some people, like Zac Efron was there too, and he was doing something because he wanted to sell his hologram to a video game.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's just so interesting. Wow. Oh my gosh. Life is just changing very rapidly, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. You just have to adjust, you know?
Yeah. All right. One more tiny question. When you're on the runway, what are you thinking in your head, and are you making eye contact?
You're not making any eye contact. Usually you'll be fired from the runway. That's the thing. Like, first show I ever did was for Max Mara. I think I was like 12 or 13 in Russia. They came to Moscow and I was smiling. I was so excited looking at everybody. And the designer came up to me and she said, you can't do that. Like, basically, because you sell clothes and it's luxury brands, you have to look above the head and kind of, you know, and now I show it in my comedy shows, like all this model looks, you know, they have to project like you're better than anybody else.
Oh my
gosh. And I struggle with that.
But is that what you're thinking? Like, in other words, are you becoming a character?
You're becoming a character for sure. Yeah. They tell you what is the character of the story. Usually there's like a little sign before you go out on the runway and they say like, you're in Amazon and you know, you're in this, or like an Egyptian goddess or some kind of other, you know, entity. So you pretend to be that person, you come out and, you know, you play that role.
Wow. No, I think that's fascinating. That's fascinating. And so are you often thinking like, walk straight, don't mess up, keep my face straight, keep your head up, keep your posture? Is that what you're thinking? Those things too? Like, is it like playing tennis or skiing where you've got like 10 things you got to do at the same time?
For sure. Yeah. You have to listen to the music. And I think it's almost like a dancing job, you know, because you have to show the clothes from the best perspective, you know, you have to be able to dance. Like, there's definitely skills how to take off the coat and how to put on a scarf. And I think actually the supermodels in the 80s, they had much more skills because it was more like a theater show. You know, if you see all the supermodels, the way they walk and like they balance and they really present themselves.
Yeah.
But now it's more like robots, you know, you go one after another, just straight and like no feelings, and like, or like, you know, just one kind of attitude.
Because the idea is like you're a hanger, as it were. You're like you're the clothes, you're the mannequin.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. There is part of that. But some designers actually want you to be a personality, which I love. Like, there is one designer, Siu Wang, she's a Chinese designer in LA. And all of her shows, she really chooses models who can you know, have that presence and a personality rather than just be like a hanger. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I have never been to any kind of runway show in my whole life. The only thing I can think about is what I've seen on TV and films.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. It's fun. Next time I'll invite you when the shows will be back.
Everybody is so dressed up when they go, aren't they?
Depends, you know, it truly depends. Like I work with this designer, Ray Corbuco, from Comme des Garçons. I don't know if you know the brand. It's very alternative. She's a Japanese designer. She's based in Paris and everything is like her show is at 4 a.m. in Paris and it's in like industrial complex outside of the city. So it's completely opposite of like dress up party in the afternoon.
That's so interesting. And is that because that's like, that's who she is? Is she like that kind of a laid back or what is that? Is that like a hippie thing? I mean, I'm just thinking about like, or is that like a progressive modern thing? To have a show at 4 a.m.
You know how they say, like, don't judge the book by its cover, but as humans, we always judge still each other by the first thing. So I think she understands. She's a really actually intelligent woman. She understands that clothes, they can portray a message. It's more than just, you know, anything. So I think she has all these messages in the way, you know, like women look and, you know, kind of a broadening people's perspective on visualizing. So when you wear her clothes, it's a statement.
Obviously you don't keep the clothes, but do they ever say, yeah, you can keep it if you give us 50%? Like actresses, often you can keep the wardrobe at 50% cost. Does that ever happen?
It happened before. I think when I started modeling, it was still a transition from like models. They're, you know, they're this important, you know, person to the whole shoot. And, you know, it's more of a personality, like all these supermodels, right? So they used to give us clothes. But as the fashion progressed and a lot of actresses started doing campaigns and kind of being, you know, like models, I think our job just didn't become so important. So we don't get any clothes anymore.
That's interesting. No, I used to be a flight attendant in the 80s and 90s. And one time I had this race car driver, Rusty something or other, sitting in first class. And I asked him, he asked for a beer. And I said, oh, well, we have, you know, Heineken and this and Miller Lite. He goes, oh, I have to have Miller Lite. I'm their sponsor. I can't be seen drinking any other beer. And he was serious. I mean, that was true. You know what I mean?
It is
true. But I guess that's a spokesperson, though.
Yeah. I mean, that's what modeling came to actually now, because the products they send you, you have to post them on Instagram. Like I worked with Lamborghini Champagne. So that was kind of a thing that, you know, I had to. It's not the worst. You know, I can't complain.
Yeah. So did they give you some champagne they had?
Yeah.
That's so nice. You know, it's just so interesting. As I don't know anything about this world, and I'm so excited that you got into stand-up. You are very funny. I saw your YouTube video. It's very funny. You're really good. So that's great that you were able to transition even above the modeling. I think that's great.
That was kind of the only way for me to communicate, you know, authentically and find my voice. So that was...
Yeah, and people do judge comedians within the first, like, 10 seconds. I mean, as you're walking to the stage, you're getting judged. Everybody is. So you have to address what they're looking at immediately. You have to.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure. There's no way to avoid it.
Especially now on Zoom, right? On Zoom, all the shows.
Yeah, you really do have to address it. What is the season? I mean, I know there's a lot to it. Like my sister-in-law, she is really into fashion. She knows what she's looking at. She can look across the room and tell you what they're wearing. She knows what's coming, what has been in the past. She just has so much knowledge, and none of that occurs to me. And I just wonder, like, do you follow? You must have to follow it all.
I think models, they're kind of, you know, an example of setting some style and being an inspiration. So you don't follow. You kind of find your unique style, and that's much more interesting, you know, than kind of following trends in anything you do, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. It's just it's a whole fascinating world. What is the season? What is that?
Well, now I can tell you what's in trending. Basically, tie-dye is really popular just because I think we're going through all this, you know, pandemic thing and you know, world news and things like that. So I think a little bit of the 60s came back into fashion and everybody wears tie-dye and all these bright colors just to feel better because it is, you know, it's affecting how you get dressed. And also like big hoop earrings for some reason are trending now.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
And sneakers, you know, I think people just want to, yeah, sneakers are really in fashion. We used to wear all these high heels, but it's kind of outdated now. Now everybody wears sneakers.
Have you ever known models to get, you know, long-term problems from all those heels?
Oh, for sure. I think, you know, like any athlete, that's why some models marry athletes, just because we understand the world, you know, it's very physical and, you know, you have to fly around a lot, stand on these heels for like 24 hours sometimes. And you do develop some, you know, kind of health issues and your career is really short.
Okay. One more question. Has there ever been a job that you're like, no, I'm not doing that?
Yeah, of course. There were jobs that, you know, and I think it took me a really, really long time to say no, just because, you know, my motivation was always to, you know, to kind of support my family in the beginning. And I think only now, after having my kids, I realize that I have to be an example for them. And I have to say no to certain things and have standards. So I think having my kids, you know, educated me and gave me the permission to, you know, to be more firm in that sense.
Good on you. You did have children young.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, my agent said this is like a killer for my career and I should reconsider that. I was going to do a Vogue in India and I was like, no, family is more important to me, you know.
Good than for you.
Work. Yeah.
And you have continued to work, so screw them.
I know, exactly.
Yeah. All right, you guys, let's get over to Eugenia's story. But before we do, I did want to remind you that the Storyworthy Hour of Power and Story Smash is going really well on Sunday nights. Eugenia, you'll have to join us. It's my new show on Zoom every Sunday night at 6 p.m. Pacific time. And it's 1 hour. I have 5 storytellers total, including myself. Everybody's been on the show before, so they're all good. And we tell stories for 1 hour. And then we play Story Smash, the storytelling game show, which is hilarious. And Danny Zucker is back from Modern Family and Blanka Patch is back, comedian Blanka Patch. And we're having just a great time. So you guys head over to storyworthypodcast.com for tickets. And you know, there's always a free option. You're welcome. Storyworthypodcast.com. Come on, you guys, help me out. All right, you guys, she's here right now. You've heard her, Eugenia Kuzmina. She is a comedian and a supermodel. And she's appeared in advertisements for, I'm going to say it wrong, because I'm so bad. Hermes?
Hermes, yeah.
Okay, good. Armani jeans, Dior sunglasses, Gap, and L'Oreal. And your modeling career took off when you appeared on the cover of Glamour. That must have just been, what was that feeling when you saw yourself on that magazine?
You know, for models, like day to day, you kind of go to auditions and your job is done in 1 day. So next day you have to again, you know, you're like independent contractor, like a comedian or an actor the same way. So it wasn't really meaning anything to me, you know, and actually it's more about the photographer for me and his vision than about like, you know, you, because it's all about their creation and you're just part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was excited. It was Alexi Hay. He's an amazing photographer. I was so grateful to work with him and I love his work. So,
but when you saw the magazine, where were you? Do you remember?
I think I was in New York, and actually as a model, you never know if you're going to finish on cover. I think a lot of actors, they actually are specifically like requested to do a cover, but as a model, they shoot like 6 models and whoever's shot stands out, they would put you on the cover. So it's a surprise, you know, I was kind of surprised.
And so if you get chosen to be the cover, then do they give you more money at that point or you don't get any more money? You just got that more publicity.
More publicity. Yeah, that's how it works. Usually, you know, all the editorials are more publicity. And then when you do campaigns or catalogs, that's when you get the real money.
Sure, sure. Have you ever been behind somebody in a store or whatever and they're looking at the cover and you're on it? And did you ever say, you want to tap them and say like, excuse me, I'm right here or something like that?
No, not at all. You know, I think it's great. I think, you know, actually it's not me. Like, honestly, I kind of like dissociate myself from that image.
That's really interesting. Like, no, I guess you'd have to in a way, because when you're talking about print, there is no voice.
There is no voice. Yeah. And that's why I started, you know, doing acting in comedy, because I was yearning to find a voice after not being able to speak.
Yeah.
I was actually fired from some modeling jobs for talking too much. And I was.
That is so funny. What did they say? Like, Eugenia, come on, keep down.
Well, it's so funny because I was working at Chanel at some point and I was so excited. That was like the company that I really, you know, respect and admired. And I remember coming to fittings and I would, you know, be polite, like ask people how they're doing. And after a while, you know everybody, so you want to talk more. And I think I was talking too much. And I came to my agency one day and they're like, okay, you don't need to go to your work anymore. And I'm like, oh my God, did I gain weight? Like, what happened? Like, I thought about that. And I was so surprised. I said, like, no, I think you talk a little bit too much and they can't concentrate on what they're doing. So, you know, I was like, okay.
That is hilarious. That is so funny. You have been featured in so many magazines like Elle, Harper's, Bazaar, Marie Claire, Japanese and Russian Vogue, GQ, Self, Shape, as well as catalogs for Hermes and Cartier. When you are in a magazine with Cartier, what is that jewelry like?
Oh my God. So they come with like a lot of bodyguards to the shoot and you can't touch the jewelry. Like they have to guard it because it's obviously their best jewelry. And, you know, probably one of those pieces would be the same as like my salary for a few years.
So what happens? They have, okay, so they've got the guard there and then there's like a jewelry handler, or who is that person?
Yes, there is a jewelry handler. Basically, they put it on your hand. You know, I had, and the casting is like almost like a hand model. You have to have like your nails perfect and then they manicure you. They make sure that you're take care of your hands for the 24 hours. And they come and they put the jewelry onto you. And it's really hard to shoot jewelry, actually. You have to hold your hand for like 7 hours, you know, in a weird positions to make sure that it looks good. It's not easy.
Wow, that's really interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Do most models, is it like the full package? Like if you do the kind of modeling you do, then you are expected to also have the perfect hands, like maybe the perfect ears for earrings, or do they go to like ear models or hand models?
They do have models like that as well. And they're actually pretty popular and make a lot of money because not, you know, we can't be all perfect all the time.
Yeah, obviously.
Or, you know, but I remember going to my first audition for French Elle. And basically, you can't see the editor unless your hands are perfect. And she sent me right back. And I was like, what?
Wow.
So you have to, you know, she's like, I'm not going to see any model if her nails are not done.
Wow.
And my agent told me to make my nails and I learned how to do nails.
Yeah,
after.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I have my father's hands. Like, I mean, honestly, my hands are big and crazy. I used to hate my hands, but now I'm very grateful because I play piano and I play guitar and I'm very hands-on with everything. So now I don't mind so much, but like, I would have been kicked out. Like, I never, like, it seems so crazy. I remember one time my niece, when she was little, she was maybe 15, and my sister said to me, you know, Baby Tracy, we always called her Baby Tracy. Baby Tracy is thinking about being a model. And I was very smug, not smug, but I don't know, whatever, more realistic. And I said, Karen, you got to open a magazine. That's the competition. Like, it's not about being pretty. It's about a very specific everything, right? It's not about like yourself or like you take a good picture and you're pretty. It's more than that.
Well, that's kind of bugged me for a long time. And that's why I started like Model Mom and, you know, talking about diversifying beauty. And thank God, I think industry now
is
very, you know, acceptive and all these messages. And, you know, I think it's going into the right direction because I agree. You know, I don't think women, and especially having my daughter, you know, I don't want her to have the standards or, you know, compare herself to other women.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, no, I totally get it. It the industry's definitely changed. It's nice just to see different body types, different colors, different everything, different hair. Yeah, it's such a pleasure to see that now. I agree. Anyway, okay, let's get to your story. Eugenia, you've done a couple of movies. You've been on TV quite a bit. Oh, you were on The Comeback with Lisa Kudrow, who I adore her. The Comeback to me still is one of the funniest sitcoms there ever was. I just think that is hilarious. I love that.
It's so funny. And the way they shoot it is like a reality show. So you really, you know, there's so much elaboration with the cameras, the way they move. Like, I learned so much on that show. And obviously, Lisa is just amazing.
She's one of the best actresses ever. She really is. Then you got to work with the fabulous Maria Bamford as well on Lady Dynamite. That must have been fun.
I know. Yeah, you know, they hire stand-up comedians and, you know, she's a stand-up comedian. And that was crazy. Like, I couldn't understand the script. Basically, you know, it's a comedy and I play a pussycat. And then there's also a guy in the commercial who plays a big dick.
So, oh, my God.
Literally, who had his costume, made up. And poor actor. So I was standing on stage and like, I'm ready. And they're like, and they call me big dick on set, big dick on set.
Oh my gosh. That is hilarious. You must've been laughing so hard.
Oh my God. I had so much fun. It was hilarious and crazy.
Oh, that's awesome. Really. Yeah. Fantastic. I'm so happy for you. You guys can find Eugenia over on Instagram at Eugenia Kuzmina. I'm going to spell it real quick. Eugenia Kuzmina. Your pictures are fabulous on Instagram. And you can also find Eugenia over at her website, modelmom.tv. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for the very talented Eugenia Kuzmina.
Okay, so my story will be very spontaneous. You know, I worked on another story before and thought I will be all ready and, you know, it will be all perfect. But I think I decided to do something really spontaneous, and it's going to be a really embarrassing story, something that I haven't shared in public. It's very vulnerable, so bear with me, guys. Also, as English is not my first language, it's a story about how I've been fired from the film with Zac Efron. And it's so funny because that film was called That Awkward Moment. Basically, that was a very awkward moment. And it's interesting. I learned a lot from that story and, you know, kind of had amazing takeaways. So I started acting pretty late after having my kids. And I never thought that I wanted to be an actor. I mean, I wanted to be an actor, but I never thought it would be possible. Basically, what happened is I had my kids and my husband is a producer. So somehow I landed in the middle of, you know, Hollywood and all this world without understanding anything, like no rules, no politics. I didn't care who was who, you know, whatever, how it works. I got one film by accident where I had to play a model with Elle Fanning, and it worked really well. Like, I auditioned for it, you know, the whole process. And I decided, okay, I can be an actor now. Like, I'm an actor. You know, these things in LA, obviously, everybody's an actor. And I had no idea how lucky I was to get this film, That Awkward Moment with Zac Efron. I was like, okay, you know, it's fine. I was so lucky. They flew me to New York. They paid for my tickets. And I had to play a bartender. I had a few lines. I worked on them. I show up on set early in the morning, like, you know, all the actors do, like 4 a.m. is the call time, and I wait the whole day until they finish and come to my scene at like midnight or whatever.
Wait a second. Is that true? You were there at 4 a.m. and they didn't get to your scene until
I mean, midnight. Yeah, it was a very complicated shoot, you know, because New York, as you know, is not ideal location with all the sounds in the streets. And, you know, it was freezing and they were supposed to shoot a romantic comedy that's like in spring. So actors were like literally freezing in between. And besides, like, my scene is not as important. Of course, I thought that I was so important, you know, after modeling, because you can really become self-centered and egotistical after having some success. And this is a completely new industry. So I was behaving really badly. So my scene, they called it at like midnight, and I have to clean some dishes and like make drinks, play a bartender. And Zach had a scene with another guy. He was a customer. So I kept breaking dishes one after another, because as a model, I actually never had a real job and I had no idea how to bartend or clean the dishes. You know, all like do it in a proper way. And I think we did like 5 takes, honestly. At the end of it, I think my hands kept shaking more and more. And I think Zach said, you know, let's just move on. Like, this is not worth it. Like, it's midnight or like 1 a.m. You're not Cinderella. So, you know, that's it. You're fired. And I was so upset. I was really pissed off. And, you know, my ego, of course, was really hurt. and things like that. I was crying all night. And the next day, there was an after party for this film as a wrap party. I showed up and I decided to prove them that I know how to bartend. So in this New York club, I'm going behind the bar and starting to make drinks for everybody, trying to prove my point, you know, whatever, you fired me, but I'm still, you know. And then only did I see two security guards coming to me and escorting me out of the party in front of the whole cast and crew, saying that you can't bartend if you don't have a license.
Oh my God, really?
That was the most embarrassing, shameful moment. But what I learned from that story is that actually, as an actor, you have to have real skills. You can't just show up and expect, you know, to fake it till you make it. And also, I got my license as a bartender in LA.
You did that afterwards?
I did that afterwards.
You wanted to know.
And yeah, I did that afterwards. I went back to acting class. I started, you know, went back to improv. And I have a lot of respect, you know, for actors and comedians. And I know that it's a skill. And I learned how to tame my ego, you know, and learn that in modeling, you're self-centered, you know, and everything is around you. And in acting, it's the opposite. You're part of the team and you actually have to give a lot, you know. So that was a great lesson in, you know, humanity and humility.
It's so interesting. When you were trying to do the scene, were you breaking dishes like while you were supposed to be talking? Like, what were your lines?
I think my lines were something like, can I serve you something? Or, you know, they were really simple, nothing, you know, elaborate. Like, it's not a Shakespeare monologue that I was supposed to do while bartending.
So how did you do dishes in your home?
Well, basically, as you know, like as a bartender, there's a specific setup, you know, and then there's like this crane that you pull out to wash the dishes. So I had a struggle with that crane and then I lost the dishes. Obviously, you know, it's a professional setup, you know, you have to mix things in the cocktail and it's not that easy.
Did you know which glasses to use or that didn't matter?
No.
Yeah.
No, I had no idea. That was, they made a setup in front of me. And, you know, obviously, if I was a better actor, I would have learned what it is, like, what is the bar thing and, you know, how to be in the environment, how to be real.
But usually the director would come over and say, okay, Eugenia, you're in the bar. All you're going to do is be washing, like, you're going to move those two cups from there to there. Just keep doing that. Usually they tell you something. No, you weren't directed at all.
They did tell me. It's definitely not a director's fault. He told me to make a drink and like I have to, as part of it, present it to, you know, the other actor.
Right.
So that was the direction. But then the rest, I had to figure it out since I'm the bartender. I had to be a professional, you know.
That is so humiliating. I'm so sorry. So that they really fire you on set.
They did. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of like they said, like, let's move on from this scene, which meant as my scene was the only scene in the film as a cameo, that was like, let's move on. I was like, okay. But, you know, I learned a lot. I think the most important thing which I learned is like being on movie set, like they hire professional actors for a reason because there's so much that goes into the production, you know, and they expect you to be professional and
consistent.
Know what you're doing, consistent, and also take care of other actors. It has nothing to do with you. It's about the other person.
Yeah, that's so interesting. It's always a collaborative thing for sure.
Yeah, and it's about the story and what makes the story better. So even if they cut your scene, it's not about you as well. It's about the story and making it better.
Now, let me ask you, after you got fired, you go back to your hotel room or wherever you were.
Yeah.
And they didn't just send you home right then?
Well, it was the last day of the shoot. So they kind of were cautious enough to invite me to the party where I created a lot of problems for the production.
Wow. And so then when you went to the party, you had that in mind before you went that I'm going to do this?
Yeah. I was, you know, I was still in my, I don't know how to describe it. My ego is still not tamed.
Wow. How old do you think you were then? I'm just curious.
I think it was not that long ago. Okay. Maybe like 7 years ago, I think, because I didn't start acting until, you know, later. So
Yeah. That's a very awkward moment, boy. I'll tell you what. I'm glad you rebounded and decided to do more stuff because that could put you way down. Did your agent ever tell you anything about that or scold you in any way, or did you hear about it?
No, you know, it's kind of like a thing that nobody talks about. So you just move on. And but, you know, as a comedian, too, like you have to bomb sometimes. You have to fail.
It's true. And it's like, true. And the thing is like my buddy Hannes Finney, who used to co-host this show with me a long, long time ago. But he would always say, you know, Christine, you're not as good as you think, but you're not as bad as you think either. You know, and as soon as you, in terms of comedy, stand up, as soon as you go off stage, like if you bombed, it's like, yeah, it makes you sick to your stomach. Like I've like thrown up. I've gotten so sick that I bombed. But Hannes would say, you know, nobody else in the club is even thinking about you. As soon as you walk away, they're not thinking about you. So it's don't worry true. About it. You know, it's such a tiny little thing, but it's hard when you're, you know, it's you personally.
Yeah, I think being a comedian, like it's definitely takes all your ego out because, you know, it can't be about you whatsoever. It's about the audience, right? And whoever listens, it's all about
yeah.
them.
Ay, ay, ay. Well, you have once again picked a very difficult career path as a comedian, but I'm glad you're in the mix. That's great.
Yeah, we're actually supposed to be in Lake Geneva next to Chicago, but it was canceled like literally yesterday because, you know.
God. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah.
No, it's okay.
Well, now it's just, I don't know, regarding the whole pandemic, it's just not worth it. Like I wanted to go back and see my mom and I had to cancel the tickets, but I just, you know, with kids, I just, it's just too, we just don't know enough.
For sure.
No, it's
well,
not.
We can do shows on Zoom for now.
Yeah. And so you have to come on my story where the Hour of Power, please. That would be great.
I would love to.
That'd be awesome. That was a great story right there. Thank you so much for sharing that, Eugenia. You cracked me
up. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I mean, I know you're a master storyteller.
Not really. Not, I mean, for me personally, I happen to have a lot of content. Like I have some crazy stories because of my life. I have done a lot in my life. But that doesn't necessarily make me a good storyteller. It makes the stories interesting, I think.
That's so great. I love how you phrased it, you know.
Yeah.
It's so amazing to live a full life. Like, it's inspiring.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, sweetie. Thank you. That's so nice of you. All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning into the show today. Don't forget to head over to storyworthypodcast.com and check out the lineup for this week's Story Worthy Hour of Power. And remember, we're playing Story Smash in the after show, and it's an all play. So you too can put your name in the hat and you'll be called. There's no more hat. There's no hat. Forget that. You can just be in the Zoom room and you'll raise your hand and we'll call on you and you can spin the wheel as well. And by you, I mean me, but whatever it lands on, you'll tell a true 1 minute story. And then we'll hear from Danny Zucker and Blanka Patch, who are the funniest judges I've ever had in the show. They're just amazing. So you guys, I'll see you some Sunday night virtually over on Zoom. And don't forget, head over to storyworthypodcast.com to get that information. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Eugenia Kuzmina.
Thank you so much. Very nice talking to you, Christine. I really love your podcast. And thank you guys here on Story Worthy Podcast. And join next week.
Yay! My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Story Worthy on iTunes and visit the Story Worthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, your home for everything home. Angie still has the same top pros and reviews you've counted on for more than 20 years, only now you'll also get access to all the tools you need to make your home a happy place. Inside, outside, big or small, Angie helps you find the right solution for whatever you need done, all from your phone. It's simple to find upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. You can even search pricing guides to see what others paid for similar jobs and easily compare quotes from top local pros to make sure you're getting a fair price. From lawn care to repairing the AC to the project of your dreams, Angie has your home projects handled from start to finish. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, they'll cover your project up to the full purchase price plus limited damage protection with their happiness guarantee. Make your home an Angie home. Check out Angie.com today. And for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm.